Raphael Farioles, who has now become the leading specialist in the world on the Amma question, still has in his files the original paper bearing this important declaration. This, plus the fact that the craft which performed evolutions in the sky over the Madrid suburban estate of San José de Valderas and landed briefly in the estate of Santa Monica on the day in question, June 10, 1967, displayed upon its belly a symbol most closely resembling the emblem used to authenticate the Amma documents, establishes between both these sets of events a link which would seem to be indissoluble. Fernando Sesma and the reports. Using the dozens of reports which he had received from 1965 onwards, Professor Sesma published, in 1967, a book intitled Amma, a Triplaneta Habitado. The fact that it should have been Fernando Sesma above, who first divulged the disconcerting Amma affair in printed form did not exactly contribute towards conferring a character of verisimilitude upon the business. Far be it for me to wish to reproach Fernando Sesma, but what is absolutely certain about him is that he has the reputation of being a man of fantasy given to speculations without much real basis, already expounded by him in earlier articles and books, such as the one entitled, Sensational. The Extraterrestrials Speak, Re-Raisions and Teachings from Men of Other Planets, also published by Editorial Espejo. The result of all this was that the public held Sesma's little book on Amma to be a product of pure fantasy from Sesma's own head. Yet the fact remained that, as Farioles and I were later able to verify, Sesma merely confused himself to reproducing the reports and the drawings, some of these truly very curious, that he had been receiving from the Ammites. That this was so was proved by Farioles, without leaving any room for doubt when, on one of his recent visits to Madrid, Lai managed to get Sesma to hand over to him all the precious originals, a whole bulky trunk suitcase full of them. Sesma admitted to Farioles that the Ammites had now ceased to interest him much, since they represented an excessively technological civilization. His present preferences, he explained, were inclined towards the inhabitants of Orco, a planet which so he, Sesma, explained, was on a much higher spiritual plane. Incredible telephone conversations. Enrique Villagrasa, a charming man with whom Farioles and I soon became very good friends, gave us a detailed account of his own first telephonic conversation with a man from Amma. This took place on November 28, 1966, and the conversation lasted almost exactly 2 hours, from 10 minutes after midnight till 2:15 in the morning. The mysterious caller spoke slowly, in a voice without inflections and with a foreign accent. Without hesitation and with staggering precision he answered the questions put to him by Villagrasa. These questions dealt with the most diverse subjects: history, sciences, archaeology, various techniques, etc. The unknown speaker replied without hesitation, though he were reading the answers out of dictionary. At times Villagrasa had the impression that he was talking to an electronic brain. Villagrasa was, however, not the only person to have long conversations with the mysterious and unknown callers. Another of the correspondents from whom Villagrasa heard was, to cap it all, a police officer, and he too had had long conversations on the telephone with the gentleman from Amma. The irritating thing about the whole business that the communication was always established only a one-way basis, that is to say, it was impossible to communicate with them, and one simply had rely solely on calls from them. More reports. Some of the correspondents turned out to be members of Sesma's group, and it became known that they too had been receiving the mysterious mimeographed communications. Among these communications there were several dealing with following themes: the biogenetic bases of the living beings that inhabit the cosmos, 24 pages, description of the Amma craft Uro Uiva M, 43 pages, with sketches and ilu, sociat structure of Amma. Some of these reports were of a high scientific level, as example the first and last of them given above. The first offend no less than an explanation of the cause of mutations, by which the various species living in the cosmos are enabled to evolve. The cause of mutations is connected with a vast cosmic cycle, the dimensions or scope of which cycle are so vast that terrestrial mans have not detected it. There is also mention in the same report of a mysterious chain of 84 atoms of krypton which, located in the hypothalamus, form the link between the soma, body, and the psyche, soul. As for the report on the Abozua, this offers a truly revolutionary view of space. Based upon a physics that has no relation whatever to terrestrial physics. The Animats describe our conception of space as simplistic, not corresponding at all to the true reality of the cosmos, being based on mathematical and geometrical abstractions. They describe a subatomic particle, what they call the Abozua. According to the manner in which these axes of the Abozua are orientated, we see the production of matter, energy, mass or of any other type of radiation. Furthermore, they say that there exist in space certain folds or warps which, when the isodynamic circumstances are right, enable them to make interstellar voyages in a time that is incomprehensible for our physicists, as their craft perform a dimensional change by reversing their Abozua, which permits them to take a shortcut without following the illusory straight lines of the propagation of light. By this means they are unable to come here in 8 or 9 months from their planet Ammo, which, according to the reports supplied by them, is in orbit around the star Ammo, located at 14.6 light-years from Earth and identified provisionally by them as the star Wolf 424 of our stellar catalogue. The Professor and the Box. Among the people who were due to have participated in the meeting of the recipients there was a certain professor, the holder of a chair in the Faculty of Medicine of the University of Madrid. He too, like the rest, had received telephone calls from the Amites. To begin with, he thought that it was a joke, but when his mysterious communicant at the other end of the telephone line demonstrated that he himself was the possessor of medical knowledge that was out of the ordinary, the professor invited him to come to tea in his house despite the absurdity, as he saw it, of the other party's assertion that he came from another planet. His interlocutor declined the invitation, but said he would give him, on loan, a little piece of apparatus which would convince him. An emissary would then come, a few days later, to collect the apparatus. This emissary was Tahi the copyist. The university professor, who has related all these details in an anonymous letter which the copyist distributed among the rest of the recipients of the reports, did in fact receive a small package. When opened, it proved to contain a little square box, with no projecting parts, that is to say, with entirely smooth sides, of metallic appearance, and of a dull black color. On one of its facets this little box had a translucent screen which was joined to the rest of the box without any dissolution of continuity, that is to say, without any mark, as thought the union had been effected at the molecular level. The little box was accompanied by some simple instructions on its use, providing for the utterance of certain determined vowels in a fixed order, whereupon the mechanism was activated. Fearing that the instrument might explode in his hands, the professor refused to do the test in his own home, and took the little box off to site faculty laboratory at a time of the day when nobody was using the premises. Before doing so, he had borrowed from a colleague a Canon camera loaded with color film, and his colleague was asked to explain to him how to work it. Arrived at the laboratory, the professor set the little black box down on a piece of beige cloth and, holding the paper in his trembling hands, pronounced the vowels in the order indicated. Immediately the translucent screen on the little box lit up, became transparent, and the professor was able to contemplate, inside the box, a histological specimen, greatly enlarged, in color, and alive, showing a neuron. The professor filmed the device while it was in operation and then, following the instructions as they were given, he saw two more historical specimens appear. Then, just as he had been told, one fine day a young man turned up and stated he had been commissioned to take back the apparatus. The color film, however, remained in possession of the professor, whose identity it so far been impossible for us to discover, despite our efforts. So we proceed with a further selection from the remarkable AMO documents which were sent to selected recipients in various parts of the world by beings, allegedly extraterrestrial, who said they had journeyed from the planet AMO to Earth, where they landed in France, at La Javie in the Department of the Bases Alpes in 1950. The AMO documents carried, as authentication, a seal marked with a thumbprint and displaying an emblem like a letter H, with curved arms and a shorter perpendicular bar bisecting the horizontal bar. In 1967 the mysterious gentleman from AMO announced that on June 10th of that year they would send a craft to land at Santa Monica, near Madrid. The recipients of this message were three of their correspondents in Madrid, and they, with many others, were present to see, on the day in question, a disc-shaped craft perform evolutions over the San José de Valdres suburb of Madrid, and subsequently land briefly at Santa Monica. The craft bore a sign on its underbelly very similar to the emblem of the seal on the AMO documents. Several photographs were taken of the UFO in flight. This event was recorded by Rafael Farriols and myself in our book Un Caso Perfecto, published, in Spanish only, in 1968, and in my article The San José de Valdres Photograph. Our views regarding relations with Earthmen. It is not possible to give you a synthesis of our present-day culture without running the risk that our ideas may seem to you to be unconvincing precisely because, in a brief resume, they lack the support of the proper argumentation set forth and developed with the requisite breadth. Our desire is to offer you a surface panoramic view of the intellectual basis of our social structure on various planes that will be familiar for you, namely the cosmophilosophical, religious, moral, physical. For us, who view the warp and woof of the cosmos as a harmonious whole which cannot be split up into disciplines or science without gravely distorting the truth, this separation into such compartments as cosmophilosophical, religious, moral, and physical is of course artificial and wrong. The links between the various different aspects of the universe are so intimate that the mental projection of them into separate watertight compartments easily alienate the student. But to set these ideas of ours down and transcribe them for you really is in truth a difficult task, when you bear in mind the fact that your fashion of mental portrayal is differently formed from ours. We are unable to make use of a common language intelligible to both of us. Even now, when I try to use verbal forms in Spanish that are familiar to you, I am putting a block upon the flux of ideas which could otherwise be communicated with ease, for the accepted meanings of your phonemes cannot correctly interpret my thought. In our case it isn't only that we have to search for a Spanish word or phoneme whose meaning analogous to our own corresponding word. The position is that, even when we have managed to do this, and even when we have made a complex lexicographic analysis of your language, the expressions formed by these words of ours would still hold, concealed within them, meanings I are strange to the tropical habits of terrestrial thinking. For this reason the ideas offered, in this communications, to others of your brethren of different nationalities are bound to be geotropical, that is to say having a marked flavor of terrestrial cultural orientation towards this or that area of Earth, but this is due to the vehicle of so communication selected. The evocative power of the phonemes that familiar to you hinders any serious attempt ex cognosological cultural transference. What is very far indeed from our minds is idea of offering you these concepts in order that I might serve for you as a substitutional doctrinal basis in place of the present-day foundations your own extraterrestrial human thought. Communications similar to these, although with specifically different content, have been through the post to philosophers, to the hierarchies of various churches, to graduates of very universities, to technical experts, to publicists, to persons of average education in various countries of OIAGA Earth. We are aware that many of your brethren rejected this material because they refused to recognize our true identity. This attitude is the orthodox one from the point of view of normal logic. But even those terrestrial MEI men, who prompted by curiosity, have retained these duplicated pages in various languages, and who have been to combine, in an admirable balance, the mental reserve and secrecy demanded by us plus an open attitude of conduct acceptance of our testimony, have never been under pressure from us to substitute our views for their own ideas. Amo Expedition to Earth. By Antonio Ribera. This is the topic which Ribera made as a description on the Amo case, in connection with the production of a half-hour video documentary on the case, subject and this manuscript, subject was used on a radio sending in Los Angeles later. I choose to take this in first as an introduction, because it gives a rapid general view on this UFO contact case, and a lot of details will be watched later on. Some strange AMA words will be used here, which is also described later in the material. The film, Video Manus. 1. Opening scene on the video production, Antonio Ribera. I am Antonio Ribera of Barcelona, UFO investigator and writer on this exotic subject. About 30 years ago I began investigating the fascinating enigma of the unidentified flying objects, commonly called UFOs, which during this entire time, and perhaps for long before, have been observed in the atmosphere of Earth, including landing on the surface of our planet. In these long years of study I have come to the conclusion that the UFOs are in fact super machines based on a technology superior to that of Earth, and that their origin is without doubt extraterrestrial. Since the year 1965 a small group of Spaniards began to receive mysterious telephone calls of long duration, some lasting more than an hour, followed in many cases by dispatch by mail of intriguing mechanically reproduced information monographs. These papers discussed diverse scientific themes and were distinguished by their high level of information and their rigorously expositive tone. The well-informed telephone callers as well as the authors of the papers called themselves extraterrestrials and said that they came from a planet they called Amo, which in turn orbits a star they called Iama, provisionally identified by them as that we identify as Wolf 424 in our astronomy catalogues, and situated some 14 light-years from Earth. In 1967 I, for the first time, came into contact with the Amo enigma. Consequently I began informing myself on the various papers and communications from the Amos, and I began to receive communications directly from them myself subsequent to that time and became one of their contactees. These papers were submitted to various nations' scientists as well as some foreigners for study. The reaction of the scientists was surprise at the high level of information in the texts. Some of the papers offered ideas truly revolutionary concerning cosmology and biology, for example. According to the authors of some of these papers, they were human in appearance, tall and light-completed, such that they could pass unrecognized among us, adopting identities as citizens of the Nordic countries. Because of this and much more, the Amo contact is one of the greatest enigmas of the UFO phenomenon. Are they from a secret society? Are they a test of credibility launched by NASA, for example, to study the reaction of Earthmen confronted by the presence of a supposed extraterrestrial race? Is it a CIA maneuver to deprestigize the subject of UFOs? Or are the Amo beings authentic extraterrestrial as they affirm? They say, in effect, that they arrived on Earth in 1950, in three disc-shaped spacecraft which landed in the French department called Bases Alpes, Lower Alps. But wouldn't it be more interesting if they told us themselves? Pictures, images from Amo. Remember, this Manus was made as a half-hour video documentary on the case. First scene showing special effects to produce the images of traveling space rapidly, until we finally arrive at a water planet covered by white clouds and blue sea on which floats a single large continent. Coming closer until it occupies the whole scene. The camera descends to the surface of the planet until a scene appears of one of the gigantic constructions in the vertical style of Amo. We pass to the interior where we see a great control room and close in on the image of a single personality whose face ends up occupying the whole screen. This personality says, I am Der 98, son of Der 97. I shall explain how our world of Amo came into contact with a sister world called by its inhabitants Earth, a planet which we call Oyaga. We are in the same control room where some years ago our technicians recorded a message from cosmic space which was not natural. We knew it was not a part of the natural noise of the galaxy. We received it in a frequency you call the 21 centimeters band, that of natural hydrogen. It was a radioelectric message in code and its origin was undoubtedly intelligent. Our technicians went to work and soon located the source of the emissions. It was your planet, Earth, a cold star of this quadrant for reasons which we will not now explain. With emotion we understood this to be a message of great importance. It was intelligent, a succession of dots and dashes that, as we later came to understand, corresponded to the emissions in your Hertzian waves that in Earth year 1934 was launched into space by a Norwegian ship that was testing the wave reflection of the ionosphere of your planet. A train of waves penetrated the ether of space and was lost. 14 years later arrived at Amo and was recorded. Our planet is precisely that distance, 14 light years, from Earth, and the radio waves travel the speed of light. We then decided to organize our first Inuiza, also an Amo word, some of them will be used further also, or expedition to the mysterious planet from which came the waves. Our advanced technology permitted us to traverse the great distance of 14 light years a few months by a method of conversion of the Abozua, or subatomic particles of our great spaceships which passed them into hyperspace or another dimensional frame of reference, leaving their normal dimension of being. 9 months after departing Amo was produced the Oulada, or materialization instantaneously of our ship in a pre-selected place above your Earth. 3. Scene changes to night in the French Alps. The peaceful scene is suddenly illuminated with a strange orangish light, and the ship from Amo materializes in a ball of yellow-orange light with traces of a greenish luminous corona, and remains suspended a few meters above the ground as a tripod landing gear is extended for landing and it slowly settles onto the surface. In a few seconds, as the luminosity fades, a door opens in the side and the first Amoites jump to the ground dressed in dark form-fitting suits. They are tall and light completed and among them are two women. Altogether there are two women and six men in this landing party. They begin to inspect their surroundings. They are at the foot of the Schevelblank Peak. The leader of the mission is O95, son of O91. A telepathic dialogue takes place. Woman, our leader O95 has something to say. O95, our telemetric apparatus is not mistaken. This planet could be a twin of Amo, similar mass, similar diameter, similar atmospheric composition, though the biological explosion here seems more important. There are more species, both animal and vegetable, than on our planet at home. He advances several paces and examines in turn and recognizes the features of some plants. O95, bring the atomic disintegrators from the ship and we will excavate a provisional shelter. 4. Seen already in the interior of the excavated refuge. The ship that brought them is parked in a hiding place near the top of Schevelblank Butte, invisible to sight. It is day and the expeditionaries leave their excavated shelter with prudence. They advance slowly and cautiously along the slope of the mountain, studying everything with great curiosity, until they arrive at a meadow where cows are grazing. O95 and his companions contemplate with stupefaction the ruminants, animals completely unknown to them. Soon from beyond a rock comes an earth boy about 11 years old, the shepherd who has been tending the herd of cows. Surprised, he looks at the strange Amoites, making a visor with his hands to see better in the bright sunlight. The expeditionaries imitate the gesture thinking it is some form of greeting, much surprised in their turn. The encounter is repeated within the next few days. The boy takes the extraterrestrials as simply strangers, and when they ask him to say the names of various objects that they have indicated, the herdsman is enchanted to become their teacher. In this way they learned the first rudiments of the French language of Earth. One day they brought the boy a page of newspaper that they had encountered, and he read it to them with some difficulty. The affairs were such that O95 decided to send the three ships of the expeditionary force back to Umo. The ships rose majestically into the night sky and disappeared, passing into another dimension. The expeditionary team remained on Earth free to pursue their own opportunities. 5. Night scene of migrant workers' dormitory, Sovsel. Night expeditionary enter the dormitory while all the workers are asleep and obtain samples of terrestrial objects and things for examination in their laboratory in the cave they have excavated. They had selected La Défense in Tartone, near La Jv. 24 years later the Gendarmerie confirmed to Dr. Claude Poher and Antonio Ribera that in that place there had been a robbery on the date indicated, and that the thieves had taken, among other things indicated in their communication from the Amites later, an electrical computer, and bars soap, which they took for food, electric light bulbs, clothes, shoes and other domestic things including a wig and organic cosmetics of the sleepers. When the police later tried to locate the robbery victims who had been living in Tartone at the time, they were found living in the surroundings of Cannes, on the Costa Azul, in homes denoting positions economic substance. The Amites had promised to indemnify, Erstat, them well for their losses. O95 then sent two of his brothers to the neighboring country, Spain, traveling to Iron under identification of Danish doctors. 6. The scene shifts now to Albacete, Spain, where in 1952 two mysterious Danish doctors introduce themselves to Doña Margarita Ruslieri, a leading woman of Spanish aristocracy. Doña Margarita owned a big house at No. 50 Cor Major, where she kept a large number of animals, dogs, cats, parrots, etc. The two Danish doctors gained her confidence and she consented to let them stay in the house, living there for the time being, where they performed vivisection experiments on some of the animals. They convinced her that they could cure some grave psychosomatic disorders that the Marquesa de Villasanti suffer, the title of Doña Margarita. Shortly after this they developed a macabre episode concerning the daughter of the Marquesa, Margarita Shelley. Affected by leukemia, they later understood, things worsened considerably, and she died short time later. The body was taken to Madrid by the two Danish doctors almost immediately. This then became the episode of the severed hand. In effect, at the death of the daughter, the doctors amputated the right hand and removed the ocular globe sometime during the trip to Madrid. The other children of the Marquesa accused her of a monster's profanation, and took their mother to court, accusing her of practicing magic and witchcraft. However, it was not her, but the Amites who were trying to isolate what they thought was an extraterrestrial virus that might have escaped control. An Amite virus perhaps, about which they did not know what effects it might have on Earth human beings. Later they could see that it was incurable by him who was experimenting at the large house in Albacete. They determined that the infection had settled in the right palm and behind the eyeballs, and while taking the body of the young lady to Madrid they performed an expedited procedure to section the hand, and to extirpate the eyes. This event plus other complications that came up at Albacete, obliged the Amites to terminate their project to study the superior vertebrates of Earth for which three members of the Inuit of to France had entered Spain through Iron with passports from Nordic countries. We should say in passing that Interpol asked the North American CIA to begin an active search for several Dolite completed men that may be traveling on Swedish passports, or perhaps even Danish or Norwegian, who spoke with difficulty and who carried an apparatus in the throat. They began to assemble dossiers on these strange visitors in the offices of Interpol, of the Duke's Crime Bureau, and in the security services around the world. A few years later, when the Amites had already brought some 15 additional members studying Earth's civilization, to other Danish doctors presented themselves one fine day at the home of a professional secretary and mechanical copier in Madrid who had advertised in the local paper an advertisement saying, "We make mechanical copies." 7. Scene shifts. Remember, this was the film Manus, to the home of a public stenographer in Madrid.